Welcome to the Zandbergen Report, where wealth strategies and investment wisdom collide, featuring your distinguished host and certified financial planner, Bart Zandbergen.
Welcome to our show of Dream Chasers and Wealth Makers. We are thrilled to be back in studio today with a new episode of the Zandbergen Report. As your host, I'm proud to bring in the movers, shakers, and difference makers who are passionate about sharing what they have learned and what you need to know today. And today I'm very pleased to have with us again, Nicole Anderson from Anderson Law Group. Welcome, Nicole.
Thank you, Bart. So nice to be back with you.
Of course. And Paul, does she take the record? Usually it's Letitia that comes in with shoes in hand.
I wasn't going to call out your guest, but she made it just under the wire here.
She's all calm and composed. Yeah, it's right. like nothing. Awesome. All right, Nicole. So we have had two sessions already of the SECURE Act, not from a legal standpoint, but more of a high level that Letitia and I have discussed. So we are excited today to dive in a little bit deeper. And I know this is something right up your alley. So why don't we start with kind of maybe just the summary of what it is, and we can kind of get more into the details, especially as it applies to your area.
Great. Well, the SECURE law was enacted December 20th, 2019, and it was effective as of January 1st. So this law made significant changes for estate planning with retirement benefits. So this is technically, it's a bit of a complicated law. It's not a replacement of our existing law. It replaces some parts, but I think of it as an overlay. It overlays certain areas of the former law. Now, many of our clients have large retirement plans. So this is definitely, I'm so glad you've had a number of episodes on this, because this is really important for our clients to understand. So now, except for five categories of qualified beneficiaries, which we're going to talk about, people can no longer defer the tax over their lifetime. Beneficiaries can no longer defer the tax over their lifetime. So we used to be able to do, we used to be able to stretch
IRA, yeah.
Right, stretch the benefits over a lifetime. So that meant it was especially favorable if you had a younger surviving spouse or a younger child. They would be able to defer the tax over their life expectancy. So that was a very powerful tool.
Right, right.
So Congress thought, hey, let's try to get some more tax revenue and let's reduce that stretch. So now most people have to take the benefits out over 10 years.
Right.
Okay. There are still some categories, which we're going to talk about, that can stretch.
So I want to make sure we compare the differences. Okay,
right.
Good.
And then some people won't even be able to go for 10 years, right? So in my world, I have to be careful, because if the trust is not properly drafted and it's a beneficiary, they are not a qualified beneficiary. They would have to take the benefits out even faster than 10 years. They might be subject to a five-year payout.
So I want to make sure we cover this when the time is right, but this comes up a lot. Like, when do we make a trust a beneficiary in an IRA and a life insurance policy? So let's make sure, let you do your thing. Let's make sure we cover that.
Yeah, that's a great point. So let's start with, what are these five specified categories of eligible designated beneficiaries? And designated beneficiaries are really a term of art when I'm talking about this. So if you do not qualify for one of these designated beneficiary categories, then you are subject to that 10-year post-death payout.
Did you say term of art?
It's you're a designated beneficiary. You're a qualified beneficiary. Yes. So let's start with probably the most important qualified beneficiary. That would be the surviving spouse.
Okay, good. Perfect.
So before, surviving spouses used to be able to have a spousal rollover.
Right.
Right. So they're no longer necessarily going to have that. They will be able to stretch, they will still qualify for their life expectancy stretch, but it will be, you know, different terminology now. So they will be able to stretch out for their lifetime, but at the end of their life, that's it. 10-year payout starts.
Okay, so just so I'm clear from my side, so if it's a surviving spouse, do we set up an inherited IRA?
Yeah.
So it's still an inherited IRA.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And important note, they also need to then select new beneficiaries.
Of the inherited IRA.
Yeah, of their inherited IRA.
Okay. So it's more technical than it is practical, right? So basically the surviving spouse can still stretch out over their lifetime.
They can.
It's just they don't have the ability to continue beyond theirs. It's maximum 10 years beyond
their death. Yeah.
Got it.
So I guess, you know, for most people, that's not going to feel too different, right?
Right.
They're still going to have the stretch, but then typically, not always, but typically married couples are not that far apart from one another. So, I mean, I see why they did this. It sounds good, right? The survivor can still stretch, but then after that, 10-year applies.
Right. Got it.
So the next one is minor children of the participant. So here, again, the life expectancy payout will apply until that minor child is 18.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, that's actually not exactly correct. It's the age of majority. So,
which is 18 in some states.
Yes, it's 18 in some states. So that would be a state technicality of what the age of majority is. And then once they reach that age of majority, then the 10-year kicks in.
Okay,
so minor children of the participant are where we have to pay attention the most when you first asked me about how do you designate a beneficiary. So typically, you know, I would ask my clients, are you comfortable that this benefit would be stretched out until your child's 18? But after they're 18, are you comfortable with them getting that full payout in the next 10 years?
Mm-hmm.
Most people will say no. So that's when you say, okay, well, your option could be to make a trust the beneficiary for that child.
Mm. Okay.
And you have to be very careful on how you draft the trust, because if you draft it as what we call a conduit trust that says all income has to go out to the beneficiary every year, they have to then take it out.
The income or the principal?
Well, it wouldn't be a qualified beneficiary longer. Okay, they would have to take it out.
Oh, they'd have to take it out and pay all the tax at that time.
Yeah, so an accumulation trust is more likely what that person will have. So that means that the trustee can decide whether to distribute income and principal to that minor child. So in that circumstance, the tax is going to be accelerated, right? You're going to have to pay that. It's going to be forced out in 10 years. You'll have to pay the tax, but then the trustee theoretically could defer those payments a little bit longer.
Okay, right? So let's pause for a second. So in that case, so you've created this trust, but the trust as a beneficiary can have 10. They can pay out over 10 years. So the trust pays tax over
IRA
10 years. Right.
Is going to have to pay the tax over 10 years.
So now it's non-qualified money.
Remember, trusts pay at the highest tax bracket.
Oh, that's the downside.
Yeah.
Okay. But then the trustee of the trust can,
terms
the parents of the trust, and then the terms can pay out as specified.
Right. But the tax is going to be accelerated.
Right. And potentially higher.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's state-driven, right, the tax?
Yeah. I mean, it's federal and state-driven.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
So no really great answer.
Not a great answer. Well, there are a couple better answers, I'd like to make sure we talk about.
Okay.
For example, charitable remainder trust would be a good way for.
Well, we've talked about that. Right.
Yeah. So let's go through that at the end. So then there's also the disabled beneficiary, right? The life expectancy payout would still apply. The chronically ill, same. And also a beneficiary that is less than 10 years younger. So they cannot be more than 10 years younger, right?
So hold on. So on the disabled and the chronically ill, does that have to be a relative?
No, it could be like a special, someone with special needs.
Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm. Now, the minor child participant, oftentimes grandparents like to leave IRA benefits to their grandchildren.
Yeah.
But they're not a minor child of that participant. So that the 10-year rule would apply to them.
Right, right.
Unless you name that trust. It's a big change. Now, people always ask me, what do I need to do? I think the most important thing that you do is you talk to your financial advisor, you talk to your estate planning attorney, and see if you need to retitle the beneficiaries. Just take a second look, double check, see what you have.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you understand how that is going to work under SECURE and how that's going to fit in your overall estate plan. if you have a large IRA and you thought that this was going to be stretched out for that person's lifetime, and instead it's being paid out in 10 years, you might want to rethink who gets the IRA and who gets other monies that you might have in your trust
right.
that you can put more restrictions on.
Let's talk about the good news.
Yeah.
The raise from 70 and a half to 72.
I know. Isn't that funny?
Such a big... So just to define that, I know you and I are kidding because we know this. So there's something called a required minimum distribution, and that is an amount that one must take out of their qualified plan. And a qualified plan is either like an IRA or 401k or 403b, and they have to start taking out old law by age 70 and a half. Odd age, but is what it is. So the year they turn 70 and a half, the new law after the SECURE Act is they can start at age 72. So they prolonged. Now, Nicole, what I'm not clear on is if somebody has already started RMD and they were 70 and a half, let's say in 2019, and they're not yet 72, do you know what happens there?
Oh, gosh, that's a really good question.
Paul, do you have the answer?
Yeah.
No.
I think...
we'll get back to you
all. Yeah, I'm not sure, but I would think that they... already started it.
That's what I think.
Under the old law, but
that's how
it
typically works. Okay. Yeah. I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
No, that's okay. Okay. So
can I ask one question before you jump ahead, though? So I just see if I understand what you're saying here, because someone else was tweeting this in. So you're talking about trust. A lot of your clients have trusts, obviously, because they want to pass this stuff along quickly without probate here. You're just talking about the IRA part of the trust.
Well, typically... If you have the perfect situation, you didn't necessarily always name the trust as a beneficiary of an IRA. So IRAs are not ever owned by the trust. They cannot be. They have to be owned by the individual.
That's what I thought. That's what I was but confused because you kept saying trust and whatnot.
The trust can be a beneficiary of the IRA.
So if the trust is a beneficiary of the IRA and the person dies... and it goes, the assets go to the trust out of that IRA. You're saying the trust still has, like anybody has to take it out within 10 years or whatever?
Yes. But it's probably, if you have the option of naming one of these qualified beneficiaries, like the surviving spouse, that would be a better.
That's what I didn't understand. That's what I was trying to get at. Or some, because you were saying many of these people will have the trust as the benefit. They've got a family trust.
Yeah,
and then
there's some
their money
reasons.
Just rolls into the family trust, but then. They think, oh, gee, it's all been inherited tax-free.
It's definitely not tax-free on the IRA side unless it's a Roth. But, yes. So, this is complicated territory that you're getting into. But we can go there if you'd like. So, when you name a beneficiary of an IRA, typically there's two types of IRAs. There's pre- and post-tax IRAs. So, most IRAs, you have to pay tax when you take... the money out. Those are traditional IRAs.
Right.
The alternative is a
deferred.
Roth.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. The alternative is a Roth IRA, which is you've already paid the tax and then you make contributions to it. So if you have a Roth IRA, then this, the tax is not really going to matter, right? But you still are going to have to take all that money out within the time period of, depending on your situation, under SECURE. So one tool that we're talking about is maybe we should talk to our clients about doing some Roth conversions, right? That's one. I think it's going to become a little more common.
Yeah, but then they got to pay the taxes now on it when they convert it over?
They do.
That's exactly right, Paul. Mm-hmm. So what we do from a planning perspective is usually, one, try to find a year where they're in a lower tax bracket, meaning they probably have maybe just retired, so their income is lower, so that might put them in a lower tax bracket. And then two, we do what's called a Roth corridor to say, okay, this is your current tax bracket. You can have X amount of more earned income before we bump into the next higher tax bracket. Let's say it's $50,000. So $50,000 is the amount that we would take out maybe on an annual basis and convert from the IRA to the Roth IRA, paying taxes at what might be a lower tax rate.
Right. So that's a good tool. So also with, naming a trust, it's not always your revocable trust that's a beneficiary of an IRA. There's also trusts that are called standalone retirement trusts. There's also trusted IRAs. Okay. So these are, people sometimes use those tools when they want to leave the IRA benefits to their surviving spouse, but they don't want their surviving spouse to be able to appoint new beneficiaries.
Right, right.
Yeah. Okay. So, which, you know, I completely understand.
Sure.
Especially if it's a blended family.
Right, right.
So naming the trust as a beneficiary, you have to be very careful. You have to make sure that your trust is drafted properly. You have to think about the income tax and the tax consequences to that. And you have to, you just have to make sure that that's what you want.
It used to be, I thought, cleaner, because it was always a spouse or a child. It was always a living person as a beneficiary, and then contingent would be the trust, right?
That's what we
for
try to
for tax purposes.
That's
that
what
was
we try
general.
To do.
But with the new lack of stretch for, in most cases, or limitation, now it's a little more complicated, a lot mm-hmm. more complicated.
Yeah.
And where your services become much more important, because then we can go through the process and decide.
Is it more of concern to the parent, let's say we're talking usually parents in this case, leaving money behind to their heirs, that the benefits of their IRA that they've set aside, probably tax-free unless it was an IRA, I mean not tax-free, tax-deferred unless it was a Roth IRA, do they really care what happens? I mean, are they planning that carefully? I want to have it dole out over the lifetime of this heir, or is it really the heirs that are saying, wait a minute, I want an option to do this, and now I don't have an option anymore. I got to take it out.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think it's a little bit of both. One thing that I like to think about is if you have a home, an investment account, and then also a retirement account, you can think about who gets what. Let's say you want to leave money to charity. So it's always been the case, and it's even more so now, that if you're going to leave, let's say you have, two kids and a charity as beneficiaries that you'd like to leave your assets to, and you want everything to go a third, a third, a third. So a third to each of the two children, two-thirds, and the final third to charity. So all things considered, it would be better to leave the retirement plan to charity and leave the other assets, the home and the investment account, to the children, right? Because mm-hmm. then we can better design the plan on how you want to leave the children money. It's more than just avoiding probate.
And does the charity have to pay tax too? I guess they would. Huh?
No, they do not. They are.
That leads into the CRT conversation,
right,
which we'll have in a minute.
Right.
So if somebody's got a, if I've got three, I got a, say that again, I got a house and I got money set aside in some sort of
investment account, taxable investment,
and then I have
account.
This retirement, this IRA, and somebody gets the IRA in your third, a third, a third analogy, two kids and a charity here. So the charity, if they get it, doesn't have to pay that tax.
Correct.
Whereas if one of the children did, they would have an accelerated time period. They got to pull it out, and therefore they'd have to pay the tax out of it.
And probably pay more tax, right? Because if you have to take out $1 million IRA in 10 years, that's going to really bump up your tax bracket.
And just to sidebar a second, because there's something that's related, Paul. So many times as people will want to donate every year to a charity.
Right.
And if they're in a situation where they might have a choice where it's either cash, or let's say they have $10,000 worth of a highly appreciated something, let's call it a stock.
Right.
ABC stock. So you can take, they could sell the stock, pay the tax, give it to the charity. Or they could take the stock, the $10,000 worth of it, give it to the charity, not pay the tax. The charity gets $10,000, sells it, doesn't pay the tax.
Mm-hmm.
Client gets the...
They get the full benefit of that, right? Not the...
Up to there's some limits I'm going to not talk about, but there's... Yeah.
This is really... You got to really think this stuff through now here. This is even... You added a whole nother layer. Everybody's heads are spinning here right now. They're running back to their trusts and their everything here and trying to figure out what they're going to do here.
I am so glad you brought that up, Art, because I think especially for charities, that's a great thing that they should be letting their donors know, right? That if someone's 70 and a half, they can avoid the income.
Right.
And especially also because our charitable deductions are limited now. So it's a win-win situation.
Right.
And I just checked about the rule that I was unsure on.
Yeah.
And yes, in that case, the old rule governs.
Does apply. So if you started, okay, we got an answer.
So you have to find out when you reach the age. So
also a little complicated.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to say it now, and then I'm saying it at the end. At the very end, just make sure you have a good advisor or estate planning attorney or both, because they can help walk you through all this, because it is a little daunting.
Right, it is. So let's talk about maybe what I think one of the best solutions for
there's a solution to all this? I thought it's just a problem. The solution is just hire you guys here.
Well, for people that really want, let's say they have a large IRA. I mean, a lot of doctors, their retirement plan is almost everything,
yeah.
I would say. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they want to make sure that the benefits are not taken out in 10 years. They don't think that their beneficiaries can handle that much in 10 years. We can still.
They may not want to give it to them. They're hoping they don't take it all out and blow it here or something.
Right.
Know, right.
So we can design a charitable remainder trust that starts on the death of the participant, and it would pay out for a longer term of years.
Mm-hmm.
It could pay out for the life of a spouse. It can pay out for a non-spouse up to 20 years. And then at that time, then the remainder would go to charity. But if you do the math and you run the numbers, sometimes the payout is even more to the person beneficiary.
Yeah, I've seen the scenarios, and more often than not, it's better for the beneficiary.
Right.
So let's define, because not everybody knows what a CRT
right.
is.
Right.
So CRT stands for Charitable Remainder Trust. And it's in an irrevocable trust in which you gift an asset to, ultimately, that goes to a charity. So it could be an asset, it could be a house, it could be a stock account, it could be cash, right?
Correct.
The donor / investor gets a deduction that year that they make the contribution. Now there is a future value, time value of money, so it might not be 100%, depending on how old they are.
Right.
The beauty of we talked about earlier, and applies here as well, correct, is that because it is a charity, the charity can sell the asset, and if they so chose, not pay any taxes.
Correct. They avoid capital gain.
Avoid the capital gain. And then the beauty of a CRT, both for a charity and for the donor / investor, is there are some options here, but a donor can get a certain amount of income from the trust for X number of years, their life, the rest of their spouse's life, etc. I'm just explaining the general one, and then we'll talk about the IRA. And whatever is left over goes to charity. And so some people listening and people that I present this to might say, well, I want to make sure my kids get all the money, or my beneficiary, or something along those lines.
So I've got a good solution. You probably do too, Bart.
Yeah, there's that. But there's, we'll get to that. But also, just doing the math of not having to pay the tax. Let's say, I don't know, let's say it's in this case, an IRA that you've never paid taxes on, and now you're not paying the taxes. If it's, you know, a stock, ABC stock that you were granted from your company, it went public, and so you have no cost basis, and now it's worth, pick a number, $500,000.
Right.
So in many cases, just by avoiding the tax capital gains up front and then the time of interest, some people that you're referring to will say, easy fix, we'll just get a life insurance policy that will cover the amount of the amount that's going to, looks like it's going to charity. There's all sorts of solutions, but CRT is a really, I think, valuable tool.
It's an amazing tool, yeah. Yes.
Does anybody ever say, you know what? Country's been good to me. I want to give the Uncle Sam as much money as I can give him here when I die.
Very few. In my
world. Actually, I've never heard that, but you kind of alluded to that earlier. So in 90%+ of my clients, it is that generation, the one that are my clients, that they want to make sure. I want to, in some cases, pay as little death tax or estate tax as possible. I want to make sure this is exactly how I want my kids to have money. They were very much in control.
Yes.
And then the next question is, okay, so from a control standpoint, how much do you care about how much goes to your family versus taxes? And I would say 1 in 10 are like, hey, I've done enough for my kids. They're fine. They'll get what they get. That's
right.
1 in 10.
Right.
There's some that are moderate that will say, and a majority are moderate. Look, there's going to be some tax. We'll do some planning. We'll work with an estate planning attorney. We may get some life insurance that'll take care of it. The kids will get the rest. And then there are those, and Nicole and I both have these kind of clients that we share, like, I don't want to pay the government a penny. And so I want my kids to get every single penny.
Every nickel I earned is going to them.
Remember, estate tax is a, really, it's a double taxation. You've already paid income tax on it. And if you're subject to the estate tax.
That's an interesting point. I never thought of that. You've already paid tax, you earned the money, and then the government wants another share just because you died.
Yeah. So you have to be over the exemption amount, which is currently very high. It's 11,
what is it, like five?
11.58 million. It went up to 11.
Wow. A person, Paul. So if you have a trust, 11.5 million times two.
Or if you're married, yep.
That's what I have to say. Okay.
Yeah. Well, you guys handle all these billionaires and trillionaires and stuff here. Yeah, that's a whole other world.
We handle 100 heirs like you.
Actually, I would almost argue that having a properly designed trust is even more important. If you need to make sure that what you have goes to your loved ones the way you want and how you want. So it's for everyone.
So this why are there still so many angry probate fights over wills and estates and all this stuff? I mean, that stuff hasn't seemed like it's gone away particularly, and not just for the uber wealthy here. It seems like people are fighting over all sorts of stuff.
Well, it's true, and it's sad. I don't. You know, that's a whole nother topic. One of my attorney colleagues put it in a way that I've always thought about. If you don't get along in the back of the station wagon when mom and dad are alive, you're not going to get along when they're deceased.
I like that one.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Somebody once said, and I'm sorry, I'm eating into your time, but somebody once said some of the biggest fights aren't over the biggest amounts of money. It's over who gets the painting, who gets mom's ring, who gets that kind of stuff.
Well, to your point, Paul, we have quickly run out of time.
Yeah.
So,
I hope she'll come back and more, because this is, I think it's one of those conversations that few people have, except you guys. And every time we do it, people tune in and go, man, that's really interesting. And they all have questions to ask here.
Yeah. Nicole, I have the honor, you may remember from the last time we were on the show, of asking my guests their final thought question. And if you could share with us your ultimate lesson learned over your career as an attorney.
Gosh, I've learned so many. It's called practicing law. Well, I think the ultimate lesson in life is to be a good human, be fair, take care of your people in life and your clients and your employees, and just do your best.
Which you do very, very well. All right, this one's a little more fun. So, Nicole, what is your guilty pleasure?
Oh, romantic comedies with a glass of wine.
Romantic comedies. We didn't see that one coming. Okay. Does she watch The Bachelor?
No, we don't have TV at our house. But
you don't have TV?
We have Netflix.
What are you, Apple like, living TV. In a cave somewhere?
Have you met my husband? He's not listening, so it's
He's not listening,
that.
Okay.
He probably won't, right?
He has strong views on that subject, I take it.
All right, Nicole, hey, thanks so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Bart.
And we thank you all for tuning in, and we look forward to being back in the studio next week. Cheers.
Tune in next week for the latest edition of the Zandbergen Report, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Catch up on our recent shows by visiting bartzandbergen.podbean.com. The Zandbergen Report is also available on iTunes, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. Interested in being a featured guest on our show, or have a question you'd like to hear us answer? Email podcast@bartzandbergen.com. Bart A. Zandbergen, CFP, and Letitia Burbaum, AIF, are registered investment advisors with Optivest, Inc., and registered representatives with Gramercy Securities, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advisory services are offered by Optivest, Inc. under SEC registration.